It's the Burt Cohen Show. America. Who is it for? Is it for the big polluting oil companies or for us? Well, I think you know the answer to that. Is it the people? Is it the big exploitative corporations that just want to dig and drill and not really care about polluting and not really care so much about people's rights along the way? Some of them, they feel like, the people who happen to live along the route of, say, a pipeline should just, give up and not fight it and let them and their higher motive just roll all over the local people. Well, of course, it is still America, and it doesn't always work like that, which is a good thing. I don't know if you've heard of the Cowboy and Indian Alliance. Thousands of people joined farmers, ranchers, and tribal leaders of the Cowboy and Indian Alliance. That was April 22nd through the 27th for a ceremonial procession and camp out on the National Mall. Why? To protest the Keystone XL pipeline. And I hope I have our guest with us on the line, Tom Genung. Thank you for being with us, Tom Genung. You are from north central Nebraska. You were born in Holt County in the Atkinson area. And have you been to demonstrations in Washington before, or is this something relatively new for you?
Well, on this topic, it just happens that I've been able to be at various demonstrations, including, I think it was back in 2011, the big climate rally that Bill McKibben and a lot of other entities put together. But this is it's the first topic. It had to do with the Keystone XL pipeline. That was my origin on this.
Uh-huh. And I guess you are a landowner in the Sandhills area with water, which is supplied by the Oglala Aquifer. And that, I guess, is what brought you out. That's where the Keystone XL pipeline is wanting to go. Is that right? So it could affect you personally.
Yeah, that's absolutely accurate there. Yeah, we're from northern Nebraska, the Sand Hills, and it started out just like a lot of other people for us, not in my backyard, but
right.
We got acquainted with things. We learned about tar sands. We learned about, how companies like this can affect the legislative process.
Uh-huh.
And influence people in the direction that they want to go. And we began learning about the impact of our whole fossil fuel industry on climate. So that's a brief synopsis of things. Certainly, when we started out, it was like, "Don't be building this thing, close to me," and that was about the extent of it.
Right. But now it's a bit more than that. It shouldn't be close to anybody, really.
Well, that's what we're beginning to find out, or we found out over time, and we're pretty strong believers in doing what we can in reference to this whole climate issue. But, for us, the first place to start is with the KXL pipeline,
right.
And it's been a pleasure to join together with Native Americans and show that unity that you're talking about there.
And I will say, Tom, the sound quality here is not the best. You're sort of fading in and out. I'm not quite sure why, but okay. Hopefully we can address that. And I wanted to...
Let me kind of switch to a different phone here and see if that's helpful, but go ahead.
All right. Well, meantime, this is probably a good time. I'm going to play a little clip from someone who was there at the Cowboy and Indian Alliance event, the CIA. Daryl Hannah was there, actress, and rocker Neil Young. They were among the crowd of thousands who rallied on the National Mall and then marched past the Capitol building. Here is a clip from Neil Young speaking to the gathering.
Thank you. Thank you so much. We stand with you. We are with you. We're with the farmers. We're with the ranchers. We're with the Indians in the USA. We are with the First Nations people of Canada. We say, honor the treaties. Honor our agreements. Honor your word. Keep your word. My mother always said to me, keep your word and clean up your mess, Neil. So this is what we want the government of Canada to do. Keep your word. Don't let this happen. It's on First Nations land. They have the right to stop it. Don't bowl over them like they weren't there, because they are there, and they will be held to pay. There's an ancient story about a black snake that comes and threatens the First Nations people across North America. And this is it. It stretches from the tar sands of Alberta to the Gulf of Mexico. And it carries this poison that is going to do incredible damage to Mother Earth. 3 times as much CO2 in this oil as any other oil on the planet. It turns a Toyota Celica into a Chevy Suburban if you burn gasoline in that. That's what happens. This is what's going down this pipeline. For who? For what? It's not for you. It's not for us. It goes to a tax-free zone in Texas so that it can be shipped to Asia or somewhere else in the world and used in automobiles to pollute. And we can't have any more pollution. We need the CO2 to stop. With my friends. They are the people of the earth. They are the caretakers of the earth. We love the earth. We don't want to see this happen. Our grandchildren will be trying so hard to dig themselves out of the hole that we're digging right now just to make a few bucks over the last few years of the fossil fuel age. We need to end the fossil fuel age and move into something better. I say to President Obama, this is your defining moment in the history of the world. Make your statement, and make a statement that's good for all time. It's a change. The change is coming. Why not give it a push? Why not stand up and put America on the right side of history? Blessings.
Well, it's Neil Young speaking to the Cowboy and Indian Alliance there in Washington. They were there from April 22nd to the 27th, joining together, Cowboy and Indian Alliance. Now, this is two groups of Americans not usually thought of as allies working together. Tom Genung, what is the significance of the Cowboy and Indian Alliance? How did this come together?
Well, that's a great question. I think it was divine guidance, short answer, but just as far as the event where Neil Young was talking there, you know, it was an amazing week. It was just wonderful to get together, people allied together, and to be able to be there on the National Mall as tourists walk by and would ask a question like, well, what are all these teepees doing, and be able to start talking to just passerbys as far as why we were there, and a little bit of one-by-one, face-to-face education.
And
as your question is concerned, how did it come together? It came together as a result of a series of meetings was called Protect the Sacred, and that was put on in South Dakota by some interested people, and ultimately several of us landowners got to be invited to it, and that was a pretty recently, you know, within the last couple of years. About 2 years ago is my first experience with the idea of it.
And so it's interesting. I mean, you both groups, the cowboys and Indians, you know, have the land that is absolutely necessary to, you know, each in your own way have firsthand awareness of potential damage of the product, the project, the Keystone XL. What are the specific concerns about what the Keystone XL project might do? I mean, it's a relatively secure pipeline, isn't it? I mean, what are the worries that how it could affect both the cowboys and the Indians that live near the pipeline route?
Well, in a simple form, you know, it's like plumbing. It's a man-made deal, and so it's not infallible. So if you listen to the advertising, it would say it's the safest way to do anything there is as far as transportation is concerned. And that's what TransCanada is. It's a pipeline company. It's a transportation company, and that kind of thing. As far as you know, the sameness as far as Native Americans and landowners across, you know, doesn't matter which state you're in.
Right.
There are those of us that pay the taxes, but yet at the same time, a lot of us feel that we have a responsibility as stewards of those natural resources. And we weren't put here just to produce. For instance, Kathy and I, the ground that we hold title to, deed to, is all pasture land. We don't raise any other crops whatsoever, and so it's grazing land as it has been ever since the beginning of time. And so for me, I kind of take pride in that. Now, some people would say I'm too stubborn to be prosperous because at my home place northeast of Atkinson, we're surrounded by center pivots and people are raising a lot of crops and things like that, and that's all fine and well. But we take pride in the fact that we've got a little creek that starts on our property, the Eagle, the south branch of the Eagle Creek, and it runs through there and that kind of thing. So, you know, the part of the deal for us, of course, being in agriculture businesses and those kinds of things, if something would happen to the aquifer, that's where the ag business has its base. And so, yeah, you know, these companies talk about the economic benefits of you know, the pipeline or building something like this. You know, if the ag business could no longer do what we've been doing, and this aquifer, the Ogallala Aquifer, provides water in about 5 states. So there you are. You know, if that got damaged to the point that it couldn't be used, and the ag business was no more, then where would the economic balance be? So, you know, the risk and no reward, I don't see it, you know. I don't see what they promote when they say, you know, they promote better incomes and these taxes and tax benefits and, oh, isn't that going to be great? Well, not for me. It's not going to change anything for me.
Well,
when it comes to the Native Americans, it's all sacred ground. This is where they used to live, and that's sacred ground. It doesn't mean that it's tribal property at this point in time, but their ancestors lived here. And so I've grown to have an appreciation, and I think through the Protect the Sacred meetings, it began to be realized on the part of our Native brothers and sisters that there's a lot of sameness, you know, that here comes a big entity, a lot of the government, it looks like a lot of the government is against against us and promoting this this project or being behind this project. And so there we are, sameness, you know, it's being taken advantage of, you know, just like the Native Americans were when us Europeans came to town.
Yeah, it's interesting how, I've noticed through the years that there's nothing like adversity to unite people and bring them together. It's the best organizer there is. Now, Nebraska is, as far as I can tell, a pretty conservative state. Is this, I wonder about, you know, the people there sometimes, there's this stereotype of demonstrators being, you know, all right or all left. My guess is this might be bringing not just cowboys and Indians together, but people on the left and on the right.
Absolutely. I was on the phone with some of the what I refer to as the North Nebraska Posse this morning, a couple of the guys. And they're both historically staunch Republicans, and another one that comes to mind that's pretty prominent in this affair is Randy Thompson from southern Nebraska here. And they all declare that they are Republican as all get out, and yet at the same time, they are, you know, are standing shoulder to shoulder with Native Americans and anybody else that wants to be opposed to the Trans-Canada pipeline. So that's pretty amazing, I guess.
Yeah, really bringing people together. And, you know, it's anything but a done deal yet. Now, President Obama has put a temporary hold on it, obviously till after the election. I don't know what he's going to do. The State Department under Hillary Clinton has come out in support of the Keystone XL pipeline. And I'm wondering, you know, is just a few questions about specifics of the pipeline, and then, you know, about the participation of various different interests in it. Now, this, right from the very start of the production, having to go way up in Alberta, it's the material is tar sands. What do you know about this? And my sense is that there's one of the reasons for worry about potential spills and leaks is because this particular substance is especially abrasive, and is abrasive to the pipe as it travels, and to the what happens from there is a lot of problem. What do you know, Tom Genning, about the actual production of it? Never mind the you know, the economic aspects of it.
Okay. well, you know, like I mentioned at the beginning, you know, we've learned a lot over time. And we learned that it is tar sands, bitumen, and you can spell that for your audience. I won't try to do that, but it's tar sands. It's not oil. And it's mined out of the ground. Open pit mining would be an example of that.
Wow.
And scraping off the burial forest to begin with.
Mm.
And so there's a lot of destruction that's going on to a very pristine environment there, and then this tarry type of soil or sand is basically picked up with dozers and dumped into vehicles, big trucks, and hauled to wherever they process it. Right there, they have processing plants near the mining, I guess. There in Hardisty and probably other places as well.
Up in Alberta, yeah.
Alberta, yeah. And so then it's processed, I guess, from the standpoint of adding other chemicals, of which we really don't know exactly what's there, because even though the question has been asked to TransCanada, and by the way, they're just a transportation company, they're not supposed to, you know, necessarily know all of the ins and outs, I guess, is part of the excuse that we hear. But we know that benzene is one of the things. And so when benzene gets in water, it doesn't take very much of it, so many parts per billion or whatever, it puts water into a toxic state. Okay, so that goes back to what I mentioned before, you know, if the aquifer gets damaged, you know, If it was just plain crude oil, that might be a different story. Now, the other thing that crossed my mind as you were posing this great question is that this type of equipment, this type of pipeline, has never been. It's huge. Okay, it's not just a little pipeline going across the country. This is a pipeline that is 36 inches wide, or 36 inches, across, and it's made of steel. Ironically, I understand that the steel is foreign produced and brought into the United States. And,
how fitting.
And then it's processed or, coated with the material and that sort of thing. So, therefore, it's claimed that it's American made. And maybe part of it is, So there you go. It's just one thing after another, the discoveries that are made. And so there's pumping stations along the route every so many miles that takes a lot of energy to...
All right.
Keep
pumping.
Stuff moving, and yeah. That's a whole other story. The energy energy to produce this stuff is pretty big business, and then it has to be under high pressure. So you got this steel apparatus running across the countryside that's proposed to move this. You use the term abrasive material through,
yeah.
And. And it has to be pumped under pretty good pressure. I remember, and I could be inaccurate on this, but I remember a number like 1,400 pounds per square inch. But I
it's a lot of pressure, whatever it is.
Yeah, it's under high pressure. So there you go. And then of course, the other thing is that I think it's either written in the State Department report or maybe it was in the TransCanada application itself, but it's pretty well understood that 1 to 2% leakage can occur with this pipe.
Ooh.
Undetectable. That's the word there, undetectable. So when they talk about their, and the ads are running right now out here in Nebraska, the TransCanada ads are running about how safe it is and the economic benefits. And gosh, I just heard one this morning where this lady says that she's part of the monitoring that reads the bells and whistles on this thing, so that if anything leaks, they'll have her shut down in moment's notice. And I don't believe any of it. Okay.
And I'll bet just a year or so ago, Tom, you didn't expect to become kind of an expert on this stuff, now, did you?
Well, I don't even consider myself an expert because. See, I'm not one to remember the exact details.
Right.
I got the general gist of what the experts are talking about, and the experts that I've been listening to say that this is no good for America. This has no economic long-term advantage, and we don't want to have anything to do with it. And we'd appreciate it if these guys would leave and never come back.
And what is the economic benefit that the people, the interests in favor of the pipeline, and who is doing the advertising anyway, and who's doing the advertising, and what are they saying on the advertising about how it would benefit places like Nebraska?
Well, on the local level, they're advertising that not only is it safe, but during the construction phase, there's going to be all this economic boom.
Right.
They're going to be buying things at the convenience store, the workers, and all that kind of thing, and so forth. And they talk about all these jobs, and they make it sound as if this is a long-term deal. Well, everybody knows when construction things go through the country, usually there are certified welders and other kinds of technicians that
sure.
go along with that, and they usually have their certifications, wherever they live, and then they travel to wherever the project is, and we've seen that happen before, and we don't hold that against.
Right.
We're not against jobs. We're not against employment. It's not farm versus unions and all that kind of thing. The way TransCanada would kind of lead people to believe.
Right. Okay. They like it simple.
They haven't out and out said that, but you know, it's a whole divide and conquer approach that gets used. And so when you talk about Native Americans and Republicans and Democrats coming together, I guess you inferred that you've seen that before during adverse situations.
Yes.
Well, I'm new to this. I never paid any attention to it in my life before. I just voted the way I thought best and hoped that I was naive enough to know that or think that I absolutely was naive enough to think that once we were done voting somebody into office, that they were going to represent us. And I'm sad to say, I'm sad to say that now that I've experienced, you know, going to the Nebraska legislature on this issue and being at hearings and a lot of different meetings and things like that, in this particular situation, that's not the case. We're not represented very well sometimes.
Mm.
So when we are represented, we say thank you very much, and we appreciate those that are listening to the people along with anything else that they have to listen to.
Hmm. Well, as Bob Dylan famously said, amongst other things, he said, money doesn't talk, it swears. And, you know, you're up against big, big money forces there. It's, you know, this is an old story, let's face it, you know. A whole bunch of Davids and one big Goliath. But as we remember from that old Bible, that Goliath didn't win in the long run. And I want to look, if you just tuned in, the Bert Cohen Show, our guest today is Tom Genning, who is a landowner, a rancher, I guess, in the Sand Hills of Nebraska, who's part of the Cowboy and Indian Alliance, which camped out in Washington, D.C., protesting the proposed Keystone XL. So a lot of our future these days is up to the states and rather than the federal government. Now, the Nebraska legislature transferred to Governor Dave Heineman its authority over eminent domain. So the legislature had authority over the concept, the action of eminent domain, and I guess that action has already been ruled unconstitutional by a lower court. But in Texas, a court upheld the use of eminent domain to seize land. Other cases are making their way through the courts. How much government oversight or control or power has been, do you think, turned over directly to TransCanada, bypassing the people's will and the people's right under the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution? I mean, this issue of eminent domain, this is really big. What's going on in Nebraska with the eminent domain? Who has that power?
That's a great question. Is it directed to me, Bert?
Yes.
Oh, I'm kidding. Yeah. Well, to start with, a lot of us had a lot to learn. My mother-in-law was one of the first on the first proposed route through Nebraska, and her ground was in that area, and she was led to believe that all of her neighbors and everybody up and down the line was already in signing easements, and if she didn't go ahead and sign an easement within the next 30 days, and this was about 4 or 5 years ago when this happened, if she didn't sign an easement within the next 30 days, then she would be taken to eminent domain court.
Whoa.
Okay, so and so that in and itself, I think for people, not only my mother-in-law, I think that was pretty intimidating, and that's back to the notion that many of us knew very little, if anything, about eminent domain. And a pretty scary sounding deal. The other thing that went along in my mother-in-law's case, and I'm sure everybody else along that original proposed route that did sign easements, part of the signing was a non-disclosure agreement. And in my mother-in-law's case, that was very frightening to her, to the point that she didn't even talk to the rest of the family for months and months and months about the fact that she'd signed an easement and all of that took place. So I don't think that's a good thing to have happen to people, particularly by a foreign corporation. and it's all about private gain for this private corporation. And usually, the first impression that many of us would have is if eminent domain was used, it's usually used in the case of there's a project that's going to happen, whether it be a road or a utility line or that kind of thing, that has something to do with the public good. Many people are going to benefit from it.
Right.
So that's kind of, you know, the first view, since you've not read the law or had any education along the line of eminent domain. So what happened with that a year ago last May is a group got together called the Nebraska Easement Action Team, led by some attorneys, David Domina and Brian Jorday. And we went up and down the line the way TransCanada did, basically, and started educating ourselves with the great teaching of Dave Domina and Brian to teach us, you know, that, number one, the eminent domain process is there, and it's not nearly as scary as one might think, not knowing anything about it. The other thing, one of the main features that was talked about in those teachings is that terms may be more important than the price.
What do you mean by that?
Well, in this particular case, TransCanada wants to buy an easement, a one-time payment,
mm-hmm.
and own it forever. Okay? And then you start asking questions, well, who has the liability
right.
if something spills? Who has the responsibility in the case of abandonment? The myriad of questions that can come up from a crowd of people, you know, and those are the kinds of things that with the NEAT membership, and by the way, you're a NEAT member if you say you are, you don't have to listen to the TransCanada representative. You don't have to listen to the land acquisition person. You just say, I'm a NEAT member, and take it up with the Domina Law Group. Thank you very much. And if and when you get a permit to come into the United States with this pipeline, we will take into consideration that maybe we'll talk to you then.
Mm. So once again, the power of TransCanada to do this oil thing. And Nebraska, as I say, I assume it's a mainly Republican legislature and governor. Are they... They must be feeling a fair amount of pressure from the people. And what's their position on this, the legislature? Are they just marching in lockstep with the TransCanada, or what is going on in the legislature with regard to this and eminent domain?
Well, one more time, that's a great question. And I guess I'm a little bit qualified to talk about it because I've been there and I watched some of the hearings, you know, over time was there when testimony was provided and all that kind of thing. So I'll try to relate it the best I can.
Thank you.
Bert, yes, the governor is definitely Republican. As you know, or maybe people know, that in Nebraska we have a one-house legislature. It's called
the
unicameral.
That's right.
And it's supposed to be nonpartisan. So basically, I don't ask the question, but you can see by the conduct of people with various topics, you know, where they might stand as far as their affiliation there. And so let's just go to the question that you're asking, okay?
Sure.
I don't remember just exactly when it was, sometime before 2011, maybe 2010 sometime. We were being crowded by TransCanada, and one of the things that we all recognized through the great work of some good leaders like Ken Winston at the Sierra Club and Jane Club with Bold Nebraska, and there were a lot of other people involved that identified the fact that hey, an oil pipeline in Nebraska is kind of unheard of. Well, yeah, you got other pipelines here and there, and maybe some of them do transport oil. But and as a matter of fact, TransCanada has Keystone One that was built several years ago, kind of toward the eastern part of Nebraska. So, and it went through during the Bush administration with no questions asked. The neighbors didn't know exactly what was going on there when I, when I talk about landowners and people that lived in the vicinity. In fact, a lot of people thought it was a gas pipeline, you know. And so, and it's smaller. I don't remember just exactly the size. And yes, it does go to Steel City, Nebraska, and that kind of thing. But that being said, back to the part about we recognized that there were no regulations per se in Nebraska about pipelines. So this is between sessions, and so we said, hey, we need to have a special session of the legislature to get the protection that's needed. Well, Dave Heineman said, there's no need for this. There's no need for this.
Mm-hmm.
No need for this whatsoever. And then, for some reason, he changed his mind.
Yeah.
Called a special session, which really irritated the members of the legislature, because they're on recess. You know,
right.
They had to come back all the way to Lincoln, Nebraska, and sit down and deal with this thing. Well, they dealt with it, and they did pass two laws, and I can't exactly quote what all went into them because there's too much history since then that's taken place, and I'll try to just recap it.
Yeah, sure. Just,
but they developed LB1 and LB4, and that put the responsibility of pipeline routing and stuff like that in the hands of the Public Service Commission, the PSC.
Mm-hmm.
So remember that, because I'm apt to forget it when I get to the next story, okay?
PSC.
I'm old, you know?
Not as old as me, but let's go on with this story.
Well, anyway, so that being said, we were looking forward to the notion that the Public Service Commission, and by the way, the members of the Public Service Commission, that board, is elected.
That's good.
Our elected people.
Yeah.
So we felt a little bit good about the idea that we were closer to that than anything else. Then along comes the regular session in 2011, and lo and behold, in the are you ready for this?
Sure.
In the Natural Resource Committee of the Nebraska State Legislature, here comes legislative bill, the proposal for 1161, Legislative Bill 1161, and it is absolutely written and produced and railroaded in there by TransCanada.
Oh, my. I'm not surprised, I have to tell you.
Okay. The lobbyists did good work, and they spent a lot of money to get her done.
Mm-hmm.
And so as that hearing took place, the hearing for Legislative Bill 1161, a lot of us were there, and a lot of people testified against allowing that to even come out of committee to be sent on to
for a full vote.
Full legislature.
Right. And so where does it stand now? That law passed? The lobbyist law?
Yeah, it did. Yeah. In 2011. And it was taken to the legislature the last day of the legislature and in the last few minutes of the legislature.
Ooh.
And it was basically voted on, and I would guess that most of the members of the legislature said this is just another thing that we need to pass because it was a priority bill by one of the members of the Natural Resource Committee. And sent on through, and that put in place that the governor has the sole authority to allow, in this case, a special bill for a special company known as TransCanada, a one-time deal, known as a sweetheart deal. I heard somebody call it that the other day.
Oh.
Sweetheart deal for TransCanada to exercise the eminent domain process.
Hmm.
Now, for the public to know, for your show, your audience to know, you know, as far as I can tell, no eminent domain has been exercised by any landowners in the state of Nebraska.
Mm-hmm. So far.
One in Texas that you're referring to with Julia Trigg Crawford, I understand that she's appealing that to another level of court down there.
Hmm. Well, it's
now, to go along with that, you, as you pointed to earlier, legislative bill, 1161, that allowed the governor to do that has been found unconstitutional. You called it a lower court. It's the Lancaster District Court here in Nebraska. That litigation was brought against the legislature, the governor. I don't remember just exactly how it's phrased in that beginning part. I'm not looking at the document.
Sure.
By three landowners. Susan Luby, Randy Thompson, and Susan, oh, it's escaping me right now.
That's all right.
But anyway, it's been found unconstitutional. So we're celebrating the small victory,
right.
Perhaps short term, because naturally that's being appealed to the Nebraska Supreme Court, incidentally, by the Nebraska Attorney General and, of course, the governor.
Does get curiouser and curiouser. Wow.
Isn't that true?
Oh, that.
1161 can really be read about, you know, if anybody's interested in
sure.
that. You can go to Prairie Fire Legislative Bill 1161, and there's a nice article written in the Prairie Fire, in the Prairie Fire magazine or publication. I don't remember which issue it is. It comes up if you look for it online.
On Prairie Fire. Well, isn't
and it's accurate, and it describes pretty much in detail and very understandable detail, at least to me.
That's always good.
I'm no scientist.
Me neither.
But anyway, it's there for people to read if they're so interested.
And it's just amazing how the battle just goes on and on and on. And you talk about Prairie Fire. I kind of would think that the governor and some of the legislature might be a little bit concerned about, a prairie fire among the populace. I mean, aren't they concerned that, you know, okay, there's money on one side, but there's the people on the other? Do you think most people agree with you, the people who went to the encampment? Where do most people in Nebraska stand on this?
Well, one of the things that's going on is that, remember, I don't know what other people have done politically speaking or getting behind candidates and that sort of thing. You know, this is kind of new territory,
right.
even in my old age. But
yeah.
One of the things that I've noticed is that we all are interested, and we're learning how that works as far as our brothers and sisters, Native American folks, are concerned. Because there's a lot of levels of government that they have within their tribal structures, and there are many. So they deal with with their own families, you know, on this stuff. Now, what I see in particularly here in Nebraska, in Holt County, and in other counties across the state, people are more interested in finding candidates to serve on the Natural Resource Committee,
mm-hmm.
to
mm-hmm.
be on the, we have a public power system over here, and so to run for office for Nebraska Public Power, and what's going on, hey, by the way, what's going on over there, who's the new candidates for the zoning board here in Adams County, or Holt County, or York County, you know, we've had committees meet with those folks and start identifying an interest. When before, those committees and those boards, county boards, utility boards, are not used to having the public come in and sit in meetings and start asking questions about where are you going with the fossil fuel industry.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one more thing before I just digress all over the place here, you know, standing together as far as the Cowboy and Indian Alliance,
right.
New CIA is concerned.
Yes.
Not all new, okay? Because those kinds of things have happened in the past up in South Dakota, I understand. Years ago, in reference to some uranium mining and those kinds of things. But it was kind of regional, I think, in nature. This, I think, is pretty big.
Yeah.
I think this takes in not only the entire Sioux Nation, which is seven tribes around the United States, but it takes in people from British Columbia and those folks that are suffering from bad health conditions up there in Alberta and along the rivers, where those folks are used to hunting and fishing for their, you know, to put bread on the table for their food and their livelihood and those kinds of things. People are getting sick with cancer at a rate unheard of before. And all of that stuff is documented. These are not just scare tactics on the part of some environmentalists out there. You know, the fossil fuel industry is quick to point out or do name calling, as far as I think they're running scared. I think they're seeing the end of the era somewhere down the road. Either Mother Nature's going to close down shop on the earth, and we see it. Well, we saw it yesterday. Look at the amount of tornadoes that we had over Arkansas yesterday. Mother Nature is talking to us. If you don't believe that in a spiritual sense, then look up the frequency with the United States Weather Bureau of how many tornadoes we generally have compared to how many we're getting to have in recent years.
No, I know. Fooling Mother Nature is something you can only do for so long. And if you just tuned into the Bert Cohen Show, our guest today is Tom Genung, who is a rancher, landowner in Nebraska, who participated in the CIA, the Cowboy Indian Alliance, which had a pretty good-sized demonstration in Washington recently. Can you describe a little bit, I mean, because the fights are in the states, and obviously it affects not just Nebraska, but that's kind of the hot spot right now. People were there from, as you say, British Columbia, from Alberta, from different states. What was it like on those 5 days of the encampment there? What kind of activities were there? And I guess there were big teepees that a lot of people came up and asked about.
Well, yeah, that was the visual, okay?
Yeah.
So we were there, and various speakers at different times, as you've already pointed out. But there was, like, an activity each day, at least. You know, one day it was to go over to the, I think the first day it was a demonstration on the steps over at the, where the ambassador is. What's that called?
The State Department.
No, the ambassador, you know, at the Canada.
The embassy.
Embassy, that's the word I'm looking for.
Sure.
I'm old, man.
I'm glad to help you.
Over there at the embassy. Another one was one evening they everybody got together and went over to one of the other State Departments and projected some images on the side of the building and had a rally and that kind of thing. We went over to Secretary Kerry's residence, Georgetown, and said some prayers and had a water ceremony in the street in front of his house. And so those are all precious moments, and they're great visuals, okay? But to go along with that, you know, there those of us that had the privilege of being there firsthand, and by the way, I got to ride, the last day, I got to ride a horse escorting. There were six of us that rode escort to the gift of a teepee to the president. And, of course, that's all nice, and it looks, and it's
good images, yeah.
Thing too. But it was accepted by the Native American Museum there. And so that was some of the visuals. But the point I was going to make is that not everybody could go to Washington, D.C.
Sure,
so
very few.
There was places like Greengrass, South Dakota, and on the steps of the Nebraska State Capitol. And so there were people that got together here at home, you know, in recognition and in solidarity with those things that we had the privilege of doing on our National Mall and around Washington, D.C.
Well, I wonder what happens now. And Bold Nebraska's Jane Kleb had a great quote. She said, "This is just the beginning. The Cowboy and Indian Alliance will ride again And she said that together we will make a clear promise that if Obama goes back on his word and approves the Keystone XL pipeline, he will be met with the fiercest resistance from our alliance and our allies from all walks of life. So what happens now? As she says, it's just the beginning, and you guys obviously aren't giving up. So what do we expect? Legislative moves, or what do you think is next?
All of it. We didn't plan on coming home and going to sleep. We didn't plan on waiting to see what was going to happen next. So there are, in fact, you know, I know my schedule, and I'll be meeting with the NEAT group, the Nebraska Easement Action Team, on the 4th, and there'll be some things that go on between now and then as far as, you know, we've got, I know Wednesday evening here, we've got a debate with the with some of the people that are running for the U.S. Senate.
Uh-huh, good.
And so I'm going to go over there and let my presence be known and you know, be a part of the process. And so we're encouraging people to be a part of the process, you know, teach other people. If you know a little bit about what this is about, then there are new people climbing on board all the time,
mm-hmm.
you know. And,
sure.
And it's kind of a, I guess you could say it's kind of a movement.
Yeah, well.
You know? And what a pleasure it's been to, you know, be a part of, you know, just be a part of that, that treaty business that took place. Up in South Dakota a little over a year ago at Protect the Sacred. The Sioux Nation was renewing a 150-year-old treaty at that point in time, and what that talked about is that some warring tribal folks came together because they knew that they needed to do that in order to get the best shake they could with what they thought was the United States government. And they were thinking about seven generations to come,
uh-huh.
not about what we're suffering through today, but taking care of business so there's something left for our children and our children's children and the like of that. And so we got to sign on. We landowners, about 20 of us, got to sign on to this new treaty with the Lakota Sioux Nation, however you describe that. And what a privilege, you know. And one of the main aspects of that treaty is to be opposed to the Trans-Canada Pipeline. So I guess we're committed.
I guess.
Here now, man.
Well, if people, we've come to the end of the time, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Tom Ginong, really very, very informative from the ground there. If people are interested in following, you know, what's been, the follow-up from the Cowboy Indian Alliance, what websites can you point people to?
Oh, it's real easy. Just either Facebook, go to Bold Nebraska, or go to boldnebraska.org. That's a good place to start, okay? And that'll link anybody up with all kinds of information from my perspective. The other thing that I'd mention, if anybody's interested from the health aspect, medical-oriented people, I met with a lady by the name of Dr. Ring, and she has a website called climate911.org. And so people can tune into that or, you know, look at that,
right.
And it will show some evidence, I would say almost proof positive that subtle changes are going on that have a great effect on human health.
And this
is alone what we're talking about up there on those rivers and places where the fumes and the pollution, both land, water, and air, are taking place where that extraction is going on.
And I'll tell you, just it seems to me this is showing that we're at a crossroads here of which way the government is going to go. Is it going to serve we the people, cowboys and Indians, left and right, people who don't want to, you know, give up their rights and their health? Or is it just going to serve the big petroleum interests? It's a big, big moment in history. And you've been part of it, Tom. Thank you so much. Very informative. Thanks for being with us on the Burt Cohen Show.
My pleasure. Have a good day.
All right, you too. And we'll do a little song about cowboys.